This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It might be late October, but the weather's been nice enough to keep gardening and working in the yard. This weekend was a good one for getting many of those chores off your to-do list before the cold temperatures set in. And joining us to answer your gardening questions this afternoon are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Peter Hunninger, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Office Horticulture Agent David Kester. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. David, Sarah, and Peter, thanks for being here today. Good to see
you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So start us off, David. What's on the October to-do list for gardeners?
For me, it's cleaning up the vegetable garden. I obviously we've still got some things out there. But I love going into spring with my garden cleaned up, my raised beds cleaned out, ready, putting on some organic matter now, getting them ready so that first part of February or mid-February, I can get in there and start growing. And it's really frustrating to me when I don't do that and I want to put out snap peas, early snow peas in the spring, and I have to go in there and clean up because it just sets everything back so much. And it's also just a good from sanitation standpoint. You eliminate some of those diseases and things that are overwintering out there and get them out of there. And it's just those kinds of things are really important for a vegetable gardener.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, what's on your list?
Well, in addition to that, I always like to make sure all my tools are clean, sharpened, put away. We like to inventory our tools to see, what is broken, what else we need. Because, again, it's aggravating when you have that spring fever and you don't have the necessary tools. They're not cleaned. They're not sharpened. You can't, get things done. So that's in addition to cleaning up everything, putting down cover crop if you haven't already, it should already be in actually, but organic material down, just getting those tools cleared out, inventoried. And actually, I like going shopping for more tools as well. So maybe thinking about other ways or what you need to. So,
mm-hmm. Peter.
Good. Well, kind of building on what they're talking about, the only cover crop you can put in this time is really winter rye. It'll germinate down into the mid-40s. But nothing I really like to do is to, at this point, just clean up the garden, get the compost in order. We're coming into a season where leaves will be dropping. It's a good time to get some, dead leaves, some carbon into your compost piles, either turn it in or to top dress them to make them look nice for overwintering. And then, you can also, if you haven't done a cover crop or anything, it's a time where it's a good idea to mulch your garden beds with straw or chopped up leaves.
Mm-hmm. David, when you were talking, and Peter was talking about this too, when you talk about cleaning up your garden area, do you remove all the spent vegetation or do you till it up in the soil?
I like to take like the old tomato plants. And, we always say don't add those to a compost pile. I do. I think if I get my compost pile hot enough, a lot of that material is going to break down. So I put those in a compost area pile and making lasagna, make layers of soil and carbon material, and it'll break down and really generate quite a bit of heat, and so it'll break down quickly. But just removing those kinds of things and having it cleared, ready to go. If you didn't get a cover crop off, you can always supplement with just organic matter over the top of the soil right now. Get some well-rotted compost or manures, make sure they're well-rotted, and apply those to the top of it.
Peter, you mentioned rye. What's the value of a cover crop as opposed to just leaving dirt down for the winter?
Well, it, like you're saying, it controls erosion is something very big. But the winter rye also will, its roots also have kind of an allopathic property to them, and so they'll actually discourage weed germination. And what those, then when you cut that back in the fall and turn it into the soil, it also increases your organic matter content. The one thing I do like to mention to people, if you want to do early plantings, say like spring peas or something, winter rye is not what you want to put in those beds because it needs to grow some into the summer, into spring, and then you have to turn the soil once it drains enough, and that could be, mid-May. And so it's not something if you want to get an early crop in. So you think your fall cover crops that die back, the mixed crops, cocktail mixes they call, you know, those are mixes that die back during the winter, and you can actually plant an early spring plant into the dead thatch if you want to. So, you know, think about what you're going to plant in the spring should help you determine what you plant as a cover crop in the fall.
And speaking of weeds, Sarah, can you just take a hoe and take care of the weeds that way the next few weeks?
You can. I really like, we've spoken in past years about our favorite tools. I really like to use the scuffle hoe. It's sharp on all edges, and I can push and pull and very sharp, and it gets that top growth there. And then, you know, you can just leave that lay there and decay. That's what I like to do. I try not to use any type of chemical, no matter if it's organic or not. And then also what I've been doing as well is using cardboard or other weed barriers that will biodegrade. We've been doing that in some of our ornamental beds, actually. We've had a difficult, a huge challenge with some nut sedge, and that is problematic in damp areas. But instead of relying on chemical application and even some mulches, we start using some cardboard and then using some wood chips and other organic material and using that method. And that seems to be working very well. And in addition to fall maintenance that you should be thinking about in your garden is maybe your lawn. If you're thinking about fertilizing, fall is the best time, and also your trees and other woody plants.
And fall is the best time to aerate a lawn, isn't it?
Yeah, on established lawn. So if you're thinking about renovating your lawn, which should have started, you know, in September, may not be the best time to aerate if you haven't had a good, you know, stance of good turf yet. But, yeah.
Does it make sense to put new mulch down on flower beds? Can you put pine mulch or straw on your garden bed at this point?
Yeah, I definitely would think about that. You know, I love my personal preference is pine straw. I mean, that's what I like to use for my ornamental as well as my vegetable. And then at work, we use leaves, we use other compost. But yes, you never want to leave soil bare. So whatever type of mulch material you prefer and have available, I strongly encourage you to do that.
What kinds of things can you plant this time of year in preparation for next year, David?
Well, trees and shrubs. I think fall is just a super time to get out. To me, there isn't any better part of the country than what we have right here in greater Cincinnati as far as fall weather is concerned. And it just lasts a long time. It's cooler. You want to get out during the days and plant. And it's not only good for us, it's conducive to roots of our trees and shrubs. They will continue to grow anytime the soils is 40 degrees or above, and that's really all of November and December. So get them in this fall, and the roots will continue to grow, and they'll just be that much more ready to supply what's needed when we have, you know, the warm, dry weather during the summer. So I think it just gives everything a head start. And even fruit trees are now starting to become available in the fall of the year from various mail order nurseries, and they can be put in now.
So are there – what about bulbs? Are there certain bulbs you can put in this
sure.
time of year?
Sure. This is the time of year for all your spring-blooming bulbs, hyacinths, daffodils, tulips, crocus, all those go in now. And most every garden store and home store is loaded with those right now.
Peter, are there ways to prolong the growing season, though, if you want to keep planting things out
sure.
there?
Sure. If you have things like – well, in some of the gardens, we're still growing kale and collards and cabbages. And if this gets – I mean, this weather now, it's really not a problem. They can handle a light frost. But if it starts getting colder, what we'll do is use low tunnels or floating row cover, and that's a white fiber cloth. And or else you can use also plastic and do these low tunnels to kind of extend your season.
And explain what those tunnels are, Peter.
Well, they're usually – you can make them out of heavy gauge wire or pieces of PVC that are kind of bent down, and you stick one end in each end of the soil. And then basically what you're making is a long, low tent over the bed. And then what that does is, you know, heat actually comes up from the earth during the evening, and then during the summer, or excuse me, during the daytime, the sun warms the bed slightly. Now, it doesn't really do that much, plants do that much more growing. A lot of what you're doing is holding these crops for later harvesting.
So how tall should these be?
I would say that when we talk about a low tunnel, it's not something you walk into. So it can be, depending on materials you're using, it can be anything from anywhere from 18 inches to 24 inches tall usually.
And just as long as you need to cover the row.
Right. And if people are interested, they can email me, peter@turnerfarm.org. And I can send you some photographs, and then our East End Community Garden down at the East End neighborhood, they actually Joshua Jones, the garden manager there, has low tunnels set up at that location. But if people contact me, I can send that address, and they can go out and actually see what these things look like.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also email us talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, I guess if you've still got tomatoes on the vine at this point, you better get them in. Is that
pretty soon?
Yeah. We have quite a few green tomatoes, so personal preference. I like some green tomatoes, so don't throw them away. But they're probably not going to get turn red if that's what you want.
A lot of people will pick them and they'll wrap them in newspaper and then store them, and they will slowly ripen and bring them out at various times. I don't think the flavor is nearly there of what a vine ripened was, but sometimes a tomato in the off season is a wonderful find.
Mm-hmm. I've actually made like a fresh relish or like green tomato salsa out of the green tomatoes, and if you have a lot and they're larger than a golf ball and bigger, your local food pantries will definitely take them, because they're very popular in the African-American community is to eat them fried with cornmeal, which is another way I really like them a great deal.
Yeah. I've also heard if you take them inside, they'll ripen in a couple of weeks. If you leave them outside, it's going to take them like 3 or 4 weeks
to
ripen.
It's a slow process, but and again, when you do that, you're losing obviously some flavor, but you will be able to. They're definitely edible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really think that unless you've got a very unusual microclimate, I would go ahead and get your peppers and tomatoes out at this point.
And this morning I harvested two small little squash. So I think I'm going to, they're pretty much dunzo. That's David's favorite word. I had to throw that one in there.
Which you probably have to explain again.
Yeah, it just means done, capiche. their life is over. So sorry, that's a little,
What is it? Is that it horticulture agent talk?
Must be.
No, I just thought it was normal, everyday conversation word. But anyway, so yeah, I'm going to get those out. And, I have to say I'm growing some pumpkins and gourds, and I'll be getting those, fortunately, I think the mildew has overtaken overtaken them. So I'll be getting those out too. I don't like to put those in compost, contrary to what David mentioned. The vine crops, they have a lot of disease that I don't feel confident that my compost doesn't heat up to the recommended, I think it's 145 or something about that.
And that's a good piece of advice. Don't compost the leaves of a diseased plant.
Yeah. Yeah. When in doubt, throw it out.
Yeah, I think that's a very good idea. Another thing, too, if anybody has sweet potatoes in the ground, start keeping an eye on them. I mean, I would probably be digging those tomorrow, except that it's just too wet right now. So as soon as the soil dries out at the Winton Terrace Community Garden, we have a couple beds of sweet potatoes we need to dig.
We will continue our gardening conversation, plus the results of our pumpkin growing contest, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and my guests this afternoon are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Peter Huttinger, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of the Home Meadow Song Farm, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Office Horticulture Agent
David Kester. And you can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk about that pumping growing competition that we had, which I blame totally on David because this was his idea in the first place. But the four of us and producer Pete Reitmeier have been competing to see who could grow the biggest, nicest-looking pumpkin, and it's time to report in today. So I'll start out. I only got two pumpkins. One of them just came out, so it's still a small guy. And then the other one is a decent size, but it's still green. It refuses to turn orange. So I guess I'm out of this one.
Well, you know, it may not color up, but the fact that you got two pumpkins is better than I did. So
two pumpkins is better than no pumpkins?
That's exactly
what
right.
happened.
I had some deer problem, and I can tell you that from here on out, I've got two grandchildren, and this will never happen again. I will have pumpkins from here on out, but this was a failure year for me for pumpkins.
Sarah, how did it turn out for you?
Well, I planted, June, and then I had some rabbits that decided to eat them for breakfast, I guess, one morning. So 3 weeks later, I replanted in some raised beds, decided to grow them vertically, and it was a success, but I planted them, I think it was like July 11th. Right now I have three pumpkins, one of which fell off the vine because, again, I'm growing them vertically and I didn't get, protection for that one. But, David, I thought these were like 3 to 5 pound pumpkins, and one pumpkin is at least, 15 to 18 pounds.
I'd say mine's so about 10 or more pounds, so.
All I can tell you is what the seed packet says. It wasn't
supposed
to get that
big. These
were
supposed to be like the little guys that you can put in a pot.
I'm going to contact the seed company and find out what happened because I've seen pictures of everybody's pumpkin, and they're all substantially larger than they're supposed to be.
Yeah, and mine are still green as well. So I, no orange pumpkin here.
Yeah. We did. I just picked our very last one last Saturday. It was 15 and a half pounds.
Was it orange?
Yeah, it was orange.
Yeah, he beat us.
And that was at from the Franciscan Community Garden. And then we had there. That was in one patch that was a plant that we transplanted, so it kind of grew in late. But the other ones, we got like five pumpkins, but they went from like 5 to 12, 13 pounds. So they were.
Yeah, you definitely need to call the seed company.
Yeah. And we shared with the Bhutanese population at the Franciscan Community Garden, and also we've been working at East Price Hill with Santa Maria Center and shared some of the squash and pumpkins with the Guatemalan population there.
So I guess my feeling is Peter won this.
From what? Yeah.
One for Turner Farms.
Yeah, one for Turner Farms. Yeah, way to go, Peter.
To be continued?
Yeah.
Yes.
If the pumpkin doesn't turn orange, can you take the seeds out and plant them for next year?
Probably not. I mean, the pumpkin should be matured before you and that means that the seed inside will be mature. So the longer it can stay on the vine and ripen, the better chance you'll have of being able to save the seeds from that.
But one thing to remember is that you can eat pumpkins green.
Okay.
And there are specific recipes, particularly some curry recipes for green pumpkins. So if your pumpkins and also even things like butternut squash, you can eat at different stages. Now, they're best when mature. Well, it depends on what you're doing with them and what your flavor profiles are. But, don't throw them out just because they're immature. They can be eaten.
Well, these were supposed to be 3 to 5 pounds. So were these supposed to be edible pumpkins? So is the meat inside going to be?
All of them should be edible. I mean, there are specific pie pumpkins that are much better. I mean, there are pumpkins grown that are hollowed out, and you actually can cook beef stew in them. The flesh of these things has been used for centuries just as a staple. Of course, our Native Americans are the ones who really started the squash and pumpkins saved an awful lot of the European settlers who came here and got them through some winters because they not only are dependable, but they store so well. So a great thing for, you know, getting through the winter for those early settlers.
So for those who have never had fresh pumpkin before, what's the procedure? You cut the pumpkin open, you scrape out the insides, and that's the part that you're eating. Is that?
Yeah, you remove the hard outer skin, and you can use that. That's, you know, that's how they make the pie and everything else. And
I love the seed. You know, one of my favorite childhood memories is, you know, roasting the pumpkin seeds, and my daughter and I we're doing that now too. She loves them. So, you know, I think it's fun to get in there, get your hands a little slimy. You know, I think it's fun for the kids.
Just dig it out with your fingers.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, yeah.
And Mark, there are pumpkin varieties that are hullless. The seed does not have a hull on it,
right?
And so you can grow those, and immediately, you know, there's no shelling of the outer hull, and you can eat them just as is. After, of course, you roast them still.
So can you go to the local grocery store and get a pumpkin and take the seeds out of that and use those seeds, David? Would those grow?
Yeah. They would be viable.
They're mature at that point.
It's just, you know, pumpkins and squash and cucumber, they're all part of the same family, and they cross-pollinate readily with one another. So you don't always know exactly what you're going to get. I had a horticulture professor who one time said, you know, that family of vegetables is very promiscuous, and they do cross readily with one another.
They're like rabbits.
And so you can end up with something that's a cross between a pumpkin and a gourd, or vice versa.
Okay, so I guess the lesson for those of us who have green pumpkins, we should have planted sooner. Because I waited until mid-July, mid to late July before I put mine in.
Yeah.
So I should have probably done it either earlier July or
June. And honestly, Mark, though, because they were a larger pumpkin, they needed a longer growing season.
So that 100-day maturity date was not exactly right.
Should they have been true to name, you would have been fine. But
Because those were supposed to be, 90 days?
Yeah, they were supposed to be a very short season.
So when did you plant yours, Peter?
It was late June and early, and then we lost some, and we replanted some in sort of second week of July or something.
So, wow, man, you had a large harvest.
Yeah.
Well, we had totally full sun, good drainage, and that was a new garden bed that we've been building for a couple of years through sheep composting at the Franciscan Community Garden. So it had really great soil, very great drainage, and, you know, I did baby them.
He's the winner.
There's no doubt about that. So when you grow a pumpkin, what put it in direct sunlight, is that the best?
Yeah, it's definitely a full sun plant. And honestly, we think we grow the best, but honestly, New England has the weather that's most favorable for them. And I did a little research, and right now Belgium has the world record holder for the most the heaviest or largest pumpkin, and it weighed in at 2,624.6 pounds. Yes, and it was grown.
Get those seeds.
Yeah, don't buy those next year.
It was grown inside a greenhouse, and I mean some really interesting things. They can take up, when they're maturing, 100 gallons of water a day. And they, when they are really starting to ripen, they can put on 1 to 2 pounds of weight per hour. So think about that.
But 2,600 pounds.
2,600
pounds. You need a
forklift
to move that, or steam shovel or something. Oh, wow. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk to Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I'm in Sanytown, and I just moved to my house a couple years ago. The previous homeowner did nothing to the garden, so there's a huge amount of erosion. Nothing grew at all in my garden this year except for a habanero bush. And it's very hardy, but now I'm wondering, do I need to bring it indoors, or is there a way to keep it outdoors where it will survive through next spring?
Habanero, it's a pepper. And it's really a tropical plant, and it's only an annual here. I don't really think you're going to have much success in digging it up and bringing it in. I think I would harvest any fruit that's on it right now, get it inside, and just let that plant be killed by frost. And then if you like it, go and find that plant next spring. And then in the interim, your garden could really use some help this fall by adding organic matter to it and compost, things like that. Leaves, ground up leaves would be ideal. Try to do as much work on that as you can this fall, and you'll have a much better garden and growing season next year.
I've been trying to do that and trying to sort out all the black walnuts from my neighbor's yard.
Well, that could be a problem. Unfortunately, black walnut has a natural toxin, and so that might be a challenge. It's called juglans, actually. That's the genus of the plant. And so that could, you know, the Solanaceae crops, peppers, tomatoes, and eggplant are the most sensitive to that toxin. It's a natural toxin, and a lot of our annuals are also affected by that. So it's nothing that you're doing necessarily. It's just the roots, the fruit itself, release that toxin. So that might be why it is a little challenging for you to grow some of, you know, your peppers and any other Solanaceae crop. So maybe you want to think about putting in a raised bed where you have a barrier of where any fruit or root could emerge and you know, release that toxin. So something to
another reason not to like my neighbors, right?
Well, hopefully not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jenny. We appreciate the call. Gretchen also has an erosion problem. She emailed, she has a hillside, 30% grade. She put grass seed down, but she thinks most of that's washed away. So she wants to know what can she do to prevent erosion until she can plant some more grass seed in the spring. And right now they have that area covered with a landscape burlap.
Okay. Well, an interesting thing about some people use a nurse crop when you seed a grass. And a certain nurse crop you actually use is winter rye. And what that does is that'll grow during the winter, and it stabilizes the hillside and also becomes kind of a nursery for your other grass in the spring. And then when tall grass is tall enough to mow, you mow it, and then the winter rye will continue to grow for a little while before it dies back, and then your fescue or whatever you put in takes over, and then you have your kind of lawn. So if they wanted just to stabilize the hillside with vegetation, they could still try winter rye.
Yeah, good point. And what I've actually been doing is transitioning some hillsides into ornamental beds because I don't want to mow any longer. And so I've been using the cardboard method, which, you know, I'm putting that down and then putting my pine straw on top of that to, you know, suffocate the turf there. So I no longer want grass there, and it was shaded out by a tree that I have and erosion as well. And so, you know, if that's an option for you, you may want to think about turning that area into an ornamental bed. Think about the sun exposure, full sun. You want full sun plants, or if you have some shade, think about, you know, a fern garden, hosta garden, or a shade-loving garden. So that might be an option for you as well.
David, any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know how big an area it is, but sod is always a wonderful, expensive way to go. But it's instantaneous, and it's almost foolproof as long as you can keep it watered. So that's an option, but an expensive one.
Do they do it? I'm curious about it. With sod, can you put that down this time of year, or is it recommended in the spring?
Usually you can do it anytime the ground isn't frozen. So obviously I think it would be better if it was a little bit before now, but as long as you're watering and you get that root system established, you know, availability might be a little bit more difficult right now. Spring is when it's generally more available.
Let's talk to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I was calling to ask about garden tool renovation, but I wanted to mention one thing about green pumpkins. I used to grow pumpkins years ago, and it's kind of fun to carve them into jack-o'-lanterns because you can't really see the orange part, and if you put them in sort of a darkish area, all you really see is the face.
Ooh,
that's
spooky.
A good idea.
That sounds good.
Yeah, so whenever I go shopping for pumpkins, I always ask them, do you have any green ones? Because I haven't grown them for a long time.
We have a bunch of green ones.
Every once in a while, in the right place, I'll find a green one. And if you put it in, you know, like in the yard or up in a tree or turn off the porch lights, it's pretty creepy. So,
well, so I have two of them.
Yeah. Good, you can try them out.
Thank you, Mary. Good advice for using a green pumpkin. Go ahead with your question, though.
My question's about, I haven't gardened for a number of years, and my tools have just been sitting out there rusting. I've been trying to get some information about how to renovate them and their wood handles. And I've got, you know, everything from vinegar solutions to soaking them in cola and tea and soaking them in molasses and rubbing off with steel wool the rust. And so I'm just kind of wondering how, and sharpening, that's the other thing. Does anybody teach you how to sharpen your tool? So I've got the rusty tool end, I've got the wood handle that needs some renovation, and then they say, you know, to sharpen them. And I do have some flat files around, but I've never been in the habit of sharpening my shovels and stuff like that.
I think there are some online videos of sharpening that you can use that are using the files, and you can, of course, buy some of the stone sharpeners, and it's just amazing the difference. I try to do when I was in college, I worked on the South Farm, and we had a landscape or a crew at that time. And they would come in and eat lunch, and while they were eating lunch every day, they sharpened their hose before they went back out into the field. And it was just, you know, they were using them to chop weeds, and it just made such a huge difference to them. But keeping a sharp tool is critical. I think, you know, wiping the wood handles down with a little bit of a rag with some oil on it helps. Linseed oil is also used.
You know, beeswax.
Just, yeah. There's a lot of things that and keeping, you know, I always am in the habit of buying good tools and trying to maintain them and try to keep them. And it's a good idea every fall to wipe those down, and especially and of course to remove the rust with the steel wool and sandpaper.
Yeah, and check out your extension office, or if you're in Ohio and your county doesn't have an extension office, then some of the Northern Kentucky offices. In fact, last year we had sharpening your tool class. So, you know, folks brought in some of their gardening tools, and we showed them how to, and we had the equipment at the extension office in Campbell County. So we haven't scheduled for the classes for late winter, early spring, but just, you know, keep us, you know, reach out to us and see. Any thoughts, Peter?
Yeah, the one thing, there's some things that you just may already have at home you can use. I mean, when I use steel wool, I usually use 4-rot steel wool. And then what you can do is WD-40. Oops, I guess we're not supposed to say a product.
Okay, that's
one
okay.
of those kind of lubricants.
It's almost become a generic term.
Which, is actually fish oil, someone told me.
Yeah.
And so you spray the tool with that, and you can remove the rust with the 4-rot steel wool, or else if you have like an old kitchen sponge that has the scrubby on the back, I find those, you know, you can use those. The SD, or it's too, you know, funky to use in the kitchen, it works wonders in the garden. Do that. And then in terms of not sharpening pruners, but for sharpening hoes and shovels and spades and things like that, you get, there's a metal file, which is called a bastard file, and they're available at any hardware store. And that's what you would use. And when you're doing that, you just remember, you just kind of glide, follow the edge of the tool, and I usually always kind of push away from myself. And you kind of go in towards one angle, so 45-degree angle, and then back at the other one. So you're kind of crisscrossing as you move forward.
And I also like to sanitize them with maybe a little bleach solution. Lysol also has a product out as well that is a disinfectant, but you never make sure you then wash that off with some soap, because then that bleach, for example, will rust your tools. So do that first, kind of like a step one, and then you may want to clean that off, sharp, and then go forward with your process.
I mean, but probably just say when you're sharpening, you probably should wear good gloves, too, to keep from cutting your
And eyewear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just for protection, absolutely.
Yeah. And like when Sarah brought up the point about sterilizing, that's always good. We usually use a 10% bleach solution. Mm-hmm. And but like you said, is sterilize, then sharpen, and oil. Because if you oil first, you're kind of defeating the purpose of oiling the tool. Yeah, but, you know, standard furniture polish and wood oils that you would put on a nice wood table, you can use those on your garden tools. If you don't have 100 rakes that you're treating, I mean, because it's more expensive, but rather than to go out and buy a pint of linseed oil, if you have some furniture polish oil and you have one or two tools you want to treat, just go ahead and use that.
Yeah.
Be real careful when you're using like mineral spirits and linseed oil. There's a little thing called spontaneous combustion that can really be, if you Google that up, it's frightening what can happen and how many homes and things have burned down as a result of that.
So these are they're flammable or inflammable?
They can be with air. They can. You want to be real careful with the rags and how you dispose of them. And
I remember someone once they had some piled in the back of their pickup truck and it caught on fire.
Oh, that's not good.
Man.
We will continue our conversation with our horticulture experts. You can join us, 513-419-7100, or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. 91.7 WVXU is welcoming Ken Rudin, the political junkie, back to Cincinnati this week. Thursday morning, you can stop by Coffee Emporium and Over the Rhine to meet Ken, me, and other members of the WVXU news team between 8 and 9. Then Ken and Howard Wilkinson will be with me at 1 o'clock for our monthly political junkie episode of Cincinnati Edition. My guest this afternoon, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Peter Huttinger, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and Co-Overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Office Horticulture Agent David Kester. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we got an email from Martin who wants to know, is it better to rake leaves off the lawn or mulch them with the mower and leave them there? So what are your thoughts on that, everybody?
It probably depends on how thick they are. I love to, you know, they're wonderful to mulch up and leave right where they are. It's great for the grass. But if they're real thick, then they ought to be raked up and put in a compost area.
Yeah, and depending upon what trees you have, oaks, for example, they'll biodegrade quickly, you know. So if you have like some magnolias or thicker leaves, it may take a little bit more time. If you're able to rake those up or bag them and, you know, put them on or give them to a neighbor, let me know. I'll come get them.
Well, when you use a mulching mower and bag at the same time, if you don't want that material on your lawn itself, then you can just take that and put it underneath the hedge or around a tree and things like that. I mean, often sometimes I'll go through and bag and then just put it right on top of a garden bed. Mm-hmm.
And Janelle emailed, she wants to know, when's the last time to mow a lawn? After the first frost or when the grass is brown?
I have mowed as late as January, and that's just because you don't want your grass growing long into the winter. You want to cut short, and as long as it's growing, you really ought to continue to mow it.
There's an old saying, if the grass is growing, keep on mowing, and that's what I always base it on.
And most of our home lawns are seeded with a cool season grass. So the fescue, for example, it likes these cooler temperatures. So, you know, if the weather's right, you know, as long as the little tillers, they're called, each one of those blades is not frozen, because then you'll ruin or, you know, kill some of those cells with your mower. But as long as, you know, it's warm.
Mark, that's the old thing that, you know, when if you seeded grass this fall, everybody thinks, well, you know, you leave it long, you let it go. The best thing you can do for that is to cut it and to cut that top off of there, and don't let it be long going into the winter.
Yeah, I've always been told keep it around 4 inches, maybe
three and a half,
somewhere in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 513-419-7100, and let's talk to Elon. Did I say that correctly, Elon?
Yeah,
okay.
Elon, how are you? I have a question. Usually you find squash seed, you see these green pumpkin seeds, but when you get a pumpkin, they're white, and, you know, of course we eat those. But what about, I guess that's a comment, but my question is, what about acorn squash seeds and butternut squash seeds? Are those all edible too?
Absolutely. Yeah, you sure can. I would defy somebody to tell me if they're eating an acorn squash seed versus a pumpkin seed. I can't imagine that you could tell any difference in them.
Yeah, now, these green pumpkin seeds that you're referring to, that's a variety a pumpkin that's specifically grown for seed. And you can, in your seed ordering catalogs, you can, you know, you can order, they'll mention which one of those are, and they have a tendency to have thinner flesh, I believe, and not as tasty as, a say, a pie pumpkin.
They are a bit bitter. Yeah. The green seeds are bitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Ilan, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk to Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
You know, I noticed you were talking about pumpkins, and I have a recipe for cooking a pumpkin, not a pumpkin pie, but this comes from a friend of mine who's a chef, and he went to the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, and it's an interesting and a fun thing to cook. You get yourself a small to medium-sized pumpkin with a smooth surface on the outside, and then you cut the top off and clean it out like you're going to make a jack-o'-lantern kind of thing, get all these seeds and everything out, and then you take honey, and you put honey inside the pumpkin and coat it with honey and put a little salt and pepper in it, and then you make yourself a stew, like a savory beef stew, or it could be turkey or chicken or vegetable, whatever, and you put it inside the pumpkin and put the lid on it and then bake it for, an hour and a half at about 300 degrees in the oven. And then you put it on your table and you slice it, and then the stew runs out and everybody gets a slice of pumpkin with the stew over the top. It's really an impressive, fun kind of a meal, to make for somebody.
It sounds really good.
Just let me know what time dinner is.
Mark, thank you. We appreciate it. Pumpkins are pretty versatile. I mean,
they really are.
You can do a lot with a pumpkin.
Really, nutritional, fiber, they've got everything. And they blend well with a lot of other different foods.
You know, another thing you can do with, like, butternut squash and pumpkin also would be you can slice it thin and dehydrate it. You skin it and then dehydrate it. And then as a dry, it's kind of like squash jerky. Mm. But then also if you put that into soup or broth, when it reconstitutes itself, it has some texture. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, that's also a nice fun thing to do with squash and pumpkin.
Another fun fall crop is kushaw. And I was speaking with one of the farmers here locally, and his kushaw crop did very well this year. And so you might find those in the market if you haven't already bought one. They're a fun crop. And one of my coworkers followed a Kentucky Proud recipe, actually, and it is a kushaw pie. And it's actually sweeter, and it's very an interesting taste. And it looked like a pumpkin pie. The color of it, but the flavor, in my opinion, beats a pumpkin pie. So that might be a fun crop if you haven't or cooked with a kushaw before. Don't ask me how to spell it, but yeah.
But it beats pumpkin, really?
I thought so. Ah. I think it's really good.
It's a giant. My wife grew them this year, and there's one that, I mean, it's about the size of a German Shepherd or something. I mean, it's like, I couldn't believe how huge it got.
Yeah.
We got an email from a listener who wants to know, is there an organic treatment to kill and prevent grubs?
Skunks?
Yeah, we've heard this before, yeah.
Yeah, moles.
Yeah, which you don't want either of those either. The grubs, milky spore is yeah. But milky spore only works on Japanese beetle grubs, and when they did we did research, and we identified what the majority of the grubs in this area were, and as surprising as it was, they weren't Japanese beetle grubs. They were
mass chafer
grubs, which milky spore doesn't work on. So that's the detriment there.
I don't know of any other. You know, I don't know if there's parasit, any other beneficial predatory insect. I don't know. That's a challenge for me. So I haven't heard of anything.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, or you can email us talk@wvxu.org. It's supposed to drop down into the mid-30s next week. But there's also the possibility this time of year it could warm back up again. So the question is it better off just to cover your plants at this point to keep them from freezing when it does get cold, or should you at this point dig them up or bring them inside and pot them?
The average date of the first frost for us is October 15th, and what that means is that every date beyond October 15th, the odds are greater that you're going to have a killing frost. So we're now at the end of October, so we are destined to very shortly have that, and I'm sure that we will. But then, you know, we always have what the Indian summer where we have beautiful, gorgeous weather from then on. And you know, I have no way of telling you whether you should cover and try to I would think at this point I don't think I'm covering anything. I'm going to take what happens, but it's kind of a personal decision. It's, you know, I don't know anybody that can tell you and forecast. They do say it's going to be getting colder. And that looks like the forecast, and some you know, temperatures down into the mid 30s, and that's going to mean frost for a lot of us.
And it's your favorite time of year too, Kester, for houseplants. So
I know,
you know. So I'm already planning on cleaning them, placing them in the right spot at my house. So if you haven't done so already, you know, think about where you're gonna put your house plants in your house. I always give them a final wash, if you will. Check for any dead or diseased. Clean the pot underneath. Make sure there's no, you know, roly-polies or any other little decomposer just, you know, sticking around there. So get those ready because, you know, in my area, it gets a little chilly and I don't want those tips or, you know, to burn.
Yeah, I have a lime plant but with quite a bit of fruit on it. It also has some prodigious thorns on it that I found just Ooh. Recently. So, I mean, the citrus can be really mean.
Let's get a couple more calls in here if we can. Leroy joins us. Hi. Go right ahead.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Okay. I have a garden spot that's approximately 10 yards wide and about 50 yards long. And I planted pumpkin, I planted squash, greens and things like that. But the problem is, within about 3 days, large numbers of weeds came back. And then I'd cut that down or pull that down. And it just got to the point that I couldn't keep up with keeping it down. Should I have used a weed whacker? Should I have tilled it daily? Or should I have used something that would cut those weeds down? I just need to know which way I should go.
I think we all have answers for you on this one, but I would suggest mulch in your case. And using transplants and then getting a mulch down as quickly as you can.
I think that another thing you want to kind of consider with this too is that, you know, what are the – is it grass? You know, what are the different varieties, plantains, thistle, depending on what the weed is, you need a different strategies. I know in Turner Farm, we'll be doing, in Price Hill, we'll be doing, in February, we'll be doing classes again, introductory classes on gardening, and we talked about specific techniques about controlling weeds and developing a new garden. So if you go to, you can email me, peter@turnerfarm.org, and I can contact you when those free classes come up. And there are other organizations like the Civic Garden Center and the Extension Agencies all offer classes. I advise you to do that. But some things are better to pull. Some are better to hoe and what we call chop and drop. But tilling can be dangerous because you can chop up runner roots and make the situation much worse.
Well, Sarah, Peter, and David, thank you for joining us this afternoon for all the advice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Peter Huttinger, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and Co-Overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Office Horticulture Agent David Kester. If we didn't get to answer your question today, the panel's going to be back during that last week in November, so call back in then, and we'll be sure to get to you. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Dave Shermer was the technical director.
I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Scott Kelly is the veteran of four space flights, served as commander of the International Space Station, and holds the American record for consecutive days spent in space. He recently released his memoir, Endurance, A Year in Space, A Lifetime of Discovery. On the next Cincinnati edition, we'll talk with Scott Kelly about his experiences living in space and how he got there in the first place. That's on Cincinnati Edition, Wednesday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.